Hey everyone! The Uncharted Veterinary Conference is just around the corner, and I have to take a quick second to say thank you to our amazing industry partners, because without them, the Uncharted Veterinary Conference wouldn't be possible. So from the bottom of our Uncharted hearts, I just want to say thank you to this year's partners, Nationwide, Nutramax, Hill's Pet Nutrition, Care Credit, and InTouch Practice Communications. This group is absolutely amazing. So thank you, thank you, thank you from the whole crew. Hey, everybody. I am Stephanie Goss, and this is another episode of the Uncharted Podcast. This week on the podcast, Andy and I are tackling a message from the mailbag. We got an email from someone who is in practice and really struggling because they have a culture that they've worked really, really hard on. And they have that kind of top of the world feeling that you get in the sense that their culture is stronger than it's ever been. Everybody loves work. Everybody enjoys their clients, their patients. Everybody gets along. Things are going great with communication. And yet, this team has had the highest turnover rate that they've ever had. They've had a whole bunch of people leave. And this person, we don't know whether they're a practice owner or a practice manager, they're sitting there wondering, what in the heck am I doing wrong? Andy and I didn't have a whole lot of details to work off of, but since when has the lack of details stopped either one of us from telling a story? Let's get into this.
And now, the Uncharted Podcast.
And we are back. It's me, Dr. Andy Rourke. And the one and only Stephanie, please don't say goodbye, Goss.
Hi, Andy Rourke. How's it going?
It's going pretty darn well.
We got a great letter in the mailbag, which I'm excited about because I think it is, you know, we get a lot of questions from people who are like, I've got this big challenge with, you know, people getting along or with culture or, you know, there's lots of big scale problems. And this one was quite the opposite. And I thought it was really interesting. I'm excited to hear your take on it, which was a practice who, it is someone who has written to the mailbag previously. So they were giving us an update on their practice. And they said that their practice culture is probably the strongest that it has ever been. Everybody gets along really well. Things are grooving. They're productive. Everybody really seems to enjoy coming to work. And yet, they have had pretty significant turnover in the last year. And So like to the point where it was a letter from a practice owner who said, you know, I feel like this might even be our highest turnover rate ever. And so they were like, what am I doing wrong? You know, I feel like we're doing all the things and everybody seems happy and it's, you know, everybody likes coming to work and yet we're still losing people. And I thought it was a really interesting and unique question. And so I'm excited to hear where your head is at with it.
Oh man. Yeah, this is a good one. This is fun. This is interesting. There's so much about this and some of it is, it's going to be interesting to have this conversation without digging into the details because I don't exactly know what's going on, but I definitely have some immediate thoughts. The first thing that popped into my head is I chuckled immediately because whenever anyone's like, hey, this thing is happening across our entire practice, what am I doing wrong? And I'm like, you, my friend, have a strange belief about how much control you have over the world, which I think is funny, you know? And again, I see it because like these things pop into my head when I have been that person and the path looks real familiar, you know, and you go, oh, I think this is going to be really
great. I recognize this forest.
Yeah, totally. I said, I know where that path goes. This will be a fun conversation because I don't think a lot of people talk about this. And so I like this a lot. There's a lot of headspace here. I've got some action steps too.
Okay. But
a lot of headspace. And so the first thing that I think we should talk about is good culture and people getting along. And, you know, it's amazing to me that people look at teams and I think we've been sold a false bill of goods, right? I think we've been sold a false bill of goods. There is this narrative that's put forward that if you are a good leader or a good manager, you will have a great culture and everyone will get along. And your team will execute at a very high level every day. And that's not true. Okay, like that's not true. So, hear this. And there's a lot of analogies of this, but in my work with leaders, whether they're practice owners or medical directors or managers or whatever, over the last 15, 20 years, I have seen absolute great leaders and bosses go through times when their culture was a dumpster fire.
Absolutely.
And they, you know, and their clinic was not a good place to be. And I have seen their clinics screw up and drop balls and wait times were through the roof and there were unhappy clients. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, and you go, what the heck? And like, I know this person and I've worked with them and like, I know that they're good. And I have seen the best and the brightest really struggle. And I just don't think people say that because we want to have, a lot of it is there's ego in vet medicine. There's so much ego in vet medicine. And I love it. I mean, I love vet medicine, not the ego. I love vet medicine. But it's like doctors can't show weakness in so right. many cases, right? They have to be right. The idea that I didn't know a thing and the other doctors knew it is absolutely terrifying for people.
Sure.
And so yeah. I don't ever want to be perceived as a doctor who is less than in any way, shape, or form. And the same mentality extends to management and leadership in vet medicine, where it's like, I would be mortified to tell people, look, man, everybody at my clinic is fighting with each other and, you know, and we do not get along and we've gotten more one-star Google reviews in the last year than we did in 9 years before. People go, oh my God, I would never share that. I go, yeah, that's why there's a perception that good leaders have good teams and good cultures all the time. It's just not true. I think one of the things that I struggle with the most as a leader is giving myself permission to have rough patches with our business and with our team. And there have been multiple times that I have been really down in the dumps and I have gone to mentors of mine who I am so lucky to have. And I will go to people who have run huge companies or I will go to people who have done inarguably incredible things in medicine. And I'll be like, man, I'm getting my butt kicked. And he's like, what's going on? And I tell them, and they're like, that happens all the time. Is that, you know, like, they're mm-hmm. like, number of times that I was right where you are, God, I can't even count them. And I'm like, what can I do to prevent myself from being here? And they're like, nothing. Nothing. Like, that's just.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you're powerless, right? One of my favorite things is I'll talk to people and they'll say, I don't have any power. I don't have any control. And I'll say, well, if you wanted to, could you make the situation worse? And they'll go, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, great. Well, then if you could make the situation where you could
still
also
have
make
power.
It better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you could also make it better. I mean, you have some power. And they go, okay, fine. There's some power. But I do think that false bill of goods is really important. I think that having the knowledge as someone who is trying to run a team, who is trying to run a practice, who is trying to run a company, that you're going to have times when your culture is great and you're going to have times when it's not so great.
Right.
And that's just life. Like that is the impermanence of life. And I think that one of the things that we really want is we desperately want control. We desperately want to achieve a good culture, to achieve a happy team, to achieve a system where we communicate with each other. And if we achieve that, then it will be achieved. We can put a checkbox next to it, and then we can move past it, and it's done. It's on our done list, which means we don't have to deal with it anymore ever because we did it, and now that's where we live forever. And I'm like, that is
not true.
Like culture is a process. It's not a destination. But so many of us are like, I will get there and then we will hold it there. And like, I don't know. I think it's depressing. I think it's depressing to realize you're not going to hold it there. And you're going to do all this work and it's going to get better and it's worth the work. And you might have it for a couple of years. You might have it for a decade or two. But at some point, the pendulum will swing back and, you know, and things will happen and you will have a not great culture for some amount of time. I think it's important for leaders. I also think it's important for people working in the clinic, because I have seen people who are like, oh, this, I guess it's time to leave because things are not as good right now as they have been. And I'm like,
right.
I don't know, man. If you can't take it, then definitely leave. You know, if it's awful and if you don't think it's going to get better, that's one thing. But for most people, it's like, especially if you're confident in the leadership, it takes time. You know, it takes time to sort of sort things out and bring them back. So anyway, the first thing I want to start off with is this idea that good culture, once you have it, it stays there forever. And then related to that is the idea that if you have a good culture, no one will leave. You will have complete stability of your people. And that is also just antithetical to the human experience in my experience.
Well, and I think a lot of it goes to your point when we think about how we share ourselves and our journeys, no one wants to look like a hot mess express, even if they acknowledge to themselves that they might be. And so, you know, sure. I think about it a little bit like the way we present ourselves on social media. Like, we're putting out the best or the glimpse where your you know, house looks perfect. And then there's just out of the screenshot, there's crap everywhere, right? And like, that's kind of how, as a society, we have been conditioned to present ourselves. And I think it's really no different in our work. We have been set up for success in school by being rewarded, by being the ones who do the things right and follow the directions. And so we're not taught to show that weakness, I guess.
Yeah.
And
no, sure.
And the reality is, I think it's so, so cheesy, but I think one of the things that really stuck with me was early on in my career, there's been two things that have really made a big difference on how I kind of looked at the world as leader. And early on in my career, I had the pleasure of getting to work with a consultant in our practice. And I remember they were a big fan of like the cheesy, like late 90s, early 2000s, like inspirational work posters.
Yes. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yes.
There's a rim with a basketball. Yeah. Yes.
But I vividly remember there was one, and like we would always laugh about it because like we would like stuff when we got together as a team, and anything that they made would always have like inspirational quotes, and it made me laugh. And the whole team week, it was kind of a joke, but I vividly remember there was one that was that way, and it had, I'm sure you've seen it there. It's like the poster, and it has three different quotes, and it defines the word fail and end and no with different words. So fail is failure is not a failure. It's like if you fail, never give up, because fail means first attempt in learning, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's reframing those thoughts. And it's the same for end. Like, the end is not the end. In fact, end means effort never dies. And if you get no as an answer, remember that no means next opportunity. And it was funny because it was like, I don't remember what the background was, but it had the cheesiest of all the backgrounds that I had ever seen on those posters. But it really stuck with me because it was like, oh, yeah, okay. Like that is true. You think back to when you're really little and you're learning, you make the mistakes and you're encouraged to learn from them. And at some point that stops along the way. Like your parents or your cheerleaders in your life might still encourage you to learn from those things, but the failing is encouraged to keep that private, right? Like, don't show the world that weakness. And I think it's the same in business. And so I think as leaders, that has honestly, like you, has been one of the most liberating things for me. It's funny because I get told all the time, like when you and I go places or are out at industry events, you know, people will come up to us and say, oh, you know, I love listening to you guys on the podcast, and you know, you just like, I want someone like you who can manage my practice. And I get told that a lot, and it always, like, I immediately turn neon red because the first thing that I will tell them is like, I'm gonna screw it up. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to screw it up probably as much, if not more, than I'm going to get it right. But that's what I love about what we do, is getting to talk about those failures, because I learned so much more by having people in my life who encouraged me to look at the failures not as the ending, but as the beginning. And that attempt to try again, you know, and fail different next time, because you're still going to fail. Like, you're never going to perfect it. You're never going to get it right. I think that it's a smart thing to lean into that as a leader and recognize that it's not going to be permanent, like you said.
Well, you and I talked about this not long ago. You know, I said, you know, last year was a hard year, but mm-hmm. I know that I am better at my job than I was a year ago. Like, mm-hmm. I know I am. And the reason is because when I look back a year ago at the decisions that were going to be made and how things were being approached, I go, ugh, don't do it that way, Past Andy. Andy, Past Andy, you're doing it. Oh, he's going to do it. Like, I look back and I can't warn him, he's going to do it. But I'm like, ooh, sometimes I would not do it that way. I would not do it. Future Andy would not do it that way. And again, I think Past Andy knew that future Andy probably wouldn't do it this way, but I don't know what else to do, so we're going this way. But like, I don't know if that makes sense, but it was true. My point when I was reflecting back and talking about this was, I know I'm better at my job, because when I look at my position a year ago and the way I approached it, I know a better way to do it than I knew how to do it then. But that only happens with failure. Because here's the thing. If you look at your job and I say to you, are you better than you were a year ago? And you're like, I'm going to say yes, because I feel like that's what I'm supposed to say. My question to you would be, how do you know? And if you have not struggled and you cannot look back and say, oh boy, that's how I would do it, I know exactly what I would do. If I could time travel back a year, I would fix this, or I would do this differently. If everything you have done has worked, then you don't have that. You're like, I don't know. A year ago, I didn't make any mistakes. Mm-hmm. And now mm-hmm. I'm not making any mistakes. And I'm like, great. Seems to me that you, my friend, have probably plateaued. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not pushing yourself. And so I think that that's important. And so we're talking as if this is the leader's fault, and it's not. But I think it's important to talk about how hardship just exists. When we talk about this whole, like, if you have not had hardship, are you pushing yourself hard enough? And I think probably not. I heard this interview with this economist recently, and it was funny because he was talking about the media. He was talking about problems with modern news and modern media. And mm-hmm. one of the things he jumped on that it was really interesting, but he really pounced on this. And he said, you know, one of the big problems with the media is we have a way of presenting disasters. Mm-hmm. as things that need to be fixed. And so if there's an earthquake and a house falls down and people are hurt, our media is like, how do we make it? How do we prevent this from happening in the future?
Right.
This should be, let's get town council in here, or let's get the government in and fix this and make sure this doesn't happen. And his point was, you don't want to live in a society where no houses fall down in an earthquake. Because in order to live in a society where no houses fall down during an earthquake, you have to have the most ridiculous permitting process.
Sure.
The construction costs are going to be asked to make it so that no building falls down. Mm-hmm. If there's an earthquake, nothing falls. Mm-hmm. Like, the build costs are enormous, and we don't have infinite money, which means that money is not going to something else that our society probably needs and uses.
Welcome to life living in California.
I mean, there you go.
I mean, it's a super, yeah, it's a great example.
Now, of course, you don't want buildings falling down all over the place when there's an earthquake. That's terrible, too.
Right.
But, and this sounds crazy, but there is a
middle ground,
right number of houses falling down.
Right.
Which means, like, if there's an earthquake,
right,
and no houses ever fall down because of earthquakes, you go, boy, we're probably over-policing this.
Right.
And housing affordability is a thing. Is it because we've got these restrictions, you know, that are just over the top? The same thing with policing. You go, you know, we see crime and we're like, how do we stop this crime? And at some point you go, you don't want to live in a society where there is zero crime.
Right.
Because that would be the biggest police state in the history of imagination. You know, it would be the end of privacy and almost certainly there would be terrible punishments or all the things you would do to have zero crime. You go, I don't want to live in a society where not a single crime happens, because that means there's no freedom.
Yeah.
And so all of those things to say, and so bear with me here, there is a right number of disasters. If you have fires all over your practice, that's probably bad.
Mm-hmm.
And if you never have a problem in your practice, what are you doing? Like, what kind of milk toast practice are you running? We're like, are you, I mean, clearly you have very limited services. Clearly you're doing minimal interaction with clients. You know, like, if no pet ever dies on the surgery table, are we doing all that we can to save pets? Or are we just going, nope, we're not risking surgery on this one? Like, you know what I mean? And again, I know that's sort of extreme example.
Mm-hmm.
But my point here is you should fail a certain amount of the time. Mm-hmm. And if you're not failing a certain amount of the time, you're not pushing yourselves. And it's sort of like, it's the earthquake example of, I know you think you want no disasters, but you don't want no disasters. You want the right number of disasters,
right,
which means there should be things that are going wrong in your practice. And if there's not anything going wrong in your practice, you're probably stagnant. I have this in our own business, Stephanie. I don't talk about this a lot, but there are times I 100% look around. You and I have done this together.
Yes.
I will look around and I'll be like, things are really quiet, Stephanie. Like, everybody is working industriously. Everyone is getting along. All of our clients seem happy. Our members are successful. And I'm like,
throw a monkey wrench
like,
in here.
Like something, something is going to happen. And again, I love you to pieces. You do this too. You'll look around and you'll be like, something has happened. And then you'll be like, I think I'm sick. And like, you'll just come up with something. You're like, I don't know. What about this inflation? And you'll just point at inflation. Like, what about inflation? And I'm primed for it. So I'm like, you're right. Inflation's going to get us. And it's like, it's because we can't just have a time when nothing is wrong, because that's just, we know that that's not how it's supposed to be. So anyway, there's.
Now, let's be clear. Annie and Stephanie are not saying go inventing catastrophes.
No, that's not good leadership.
Nobody wants that either.
But nobody wants that either.
I love your point, and I think the anesthesia example is a really good one, because when you first said that, my thought was, I can imagine countless numbers of people in veterinary medicine who would say no anesthetic death is acceptable. And I can understand why they would say that, because we care about our patients and we don't want to lose patients. And the point that you were making, which I think is a, like, in my head, these are the mental gymnastics that I was doing while you said that. Then I was like, well, but if no patient ever dies under anesthesia, we don't have the learning opportunities that come from doing, you know, rounds postmortem after an anesthetic death. We don't learn about how we could have done things better or differently or worked differently together as a team. Like, we don't have those opportunities. And the reality is, to your point, we also probably aren't putting patients who could benefit in the long run from what we're trying to do by putting them under anesthesia under, because we're probably just saying that we don't want to risk it, right? We're right, minimizing the risk by just avoiding it or sending them somewhere else. And that doesn't mean that the risk is not happening then elsewhere. It's just not happening in our backyard. And so, like, I think that that's actually a really, really good example. And I will say, like, as a technician, anesthetic deaths suck. They stick with you. They haunt you. They're awful. And you learn.
I guess I would say this. And so I think of it as, I'm not saying it's okay for pets to die under anesthesia.
Of course.
Doing wellness procedures or dentistry.
Right, of course.
I'm talking about if you're an emergency vet and no patient ever dies in your hands, I have a hard time getting my head around how that happens. You know what I mean?
I just don't think that's reality.
It's not supposed to be reality, but that's the point. Now, if every patient you touch dies, that's bad.
Right. yes.
But if you're an emergency vet patient ever dies, I'm like, are you referring the really sick ones away? Are you, you know what I mean? Like, how are you doing that? Because that's not how life is. I think every vet should have a pile of bones. And again, I may regret saying all this, but I hope not. I hope people hear, I hope people hear the intention in my voice is like, every vet should have a pile of bones. Because if you don't have a pile of bones, I think that probably means that you're not wading into cases that are challenging. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
100%.
I mean, the greatest clinicians I've ever met in my life talk about their pile of bones. And like, these are the people writing the textbooks. These are the people I interview over at the Conan Shame podcast. Like, I interview them because they are geniuses and they talk about their pile of bones. And I go, these people are cutting edge. But here's the thing. If you never have something go wrong, how are you the expert? You know what I mean? Like, you're clearly not pushing yourself out there, you know what I mean, to stretch yourself and expand and learn. So anyway, I don't want to get too much bogged down in this. I hope people sort of understand what I'm saying as far as the right number of disasters. There's definitely going to be some one-star reviews of people talking about Andy is pro houses falling down and killing people. He likes earthquakes. He likes dead pets. He likes, I don't know, whatever else I talked about.
This is just going to be one of those episodes.
I know. Okay. Moving on. If you run a business you don't ever have a disaster, I think you're probably doing something wrong.
Well, and so let me take it back and also take it back to onto the next point, which is if you run a practice or any kind of business and you have the same team for ever and ever and ever, and you never have change in that team, aren't you also then missing opportunity to grow and develop and learn the same way we would learn from an anesthetic death or a house falling down? Like, when you add somebody new to the team, you have that forced growth. You have to figure out how to integrate them, how to learn from them, how to absorb them into your culture, and vice versa. And like, so I think I agreed with you when I read it. I thought, oh, okay, this practice owner is doing what so many of us do, which is take something that isn't ours, that is not a monkey for us to carry, and putting it squarely on their back. And they're saying, what, you know, because they specifically said, what am I doing wrong? And so your point about you don't actually have the control here, number one. Number two, we should want to have some turnover. And we should want to have some change and growth in our team. And that's not to say that we want to lose good people, which is where I think this email was coming from, was we have a great culture. I like everybody. And it seems like they're all happy. So why are they leaving? Yeah. And I think for me, like from a headspace perspective, I love the, you know, your idea of what do you actually control here? Because I think that that's really important. And I think it's really important to recognize that there is a lot we can't control when it comes to turnover in our practice, and not just for us, for industries as a whole. It was interesting when we were getting ready for this, and I thought, I was curious to see post-COVID, like, what is the current separation rate? And it's interesting because for 2021, the separation rate of all U.S. jobs was about 47%, but it has grown tremendously since COVID has happened. And so the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics, and I'll put this in the show notes for people who want to get nerdy on data, but they publish data every single month about turnover in across industries and across sectors. And historically, healthcare, which I would argue that we are a part of, has one of the highest sections of turnover. And they actually did a look back now that we have become post-COVID, and the voluntary quitting has more than doubled over the last 10 years, like the percent, the rate at which people are quitting. And so this is a thing that is not only happening in veterinary medicine, but is happening across all industries, and it has continued to grow and in frequency. And so I think that when we think about what do we control here, I think what we don't control is the fact that people are going to quit We know that they're going to quit. In fact, large percentages of them are going to quit, right? And so I think part of the headspace has to be accepting our fate and recognizing that we can do, we can work as hard as humanly possible. We can have the best culture in the world. And people are still going to leave. Babies are going to get born. Marriages are going to happen. Moves are going to happen. Separations are going to happen. Like, there is so much as an employer that we cannot control. And so, so much of that headspace has to start with recognizing what you don't, what you do control, how much of it you actually do control, and also recognizing what we don't control.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. All right, let me summarize sort of headspace so far, because I know it's kind of rambled all over the place, and then we kind of wrap this up. The things for me, I think your point is great. I use the phrase all the time. There's three things you can't control: the past, the future, and other people. And your staff are other people. Which means you can't control them. I think people are going to leave, and it has nothing to do with work. We have all left jobs that we liked for lots of reasons, and these things just happen. You and I, when we're recording this, we had our last episode that came out was "There's Something in the Water, Everybody's Pregnant." And we just talked about, like, I don't know why we have, you know, what seems like
an epidemic of babies.
Pregnancy. Yeah, an epidemic of babies. But it just, like, it seems like it feels that way sometimes. Yeah. And you just have to deal with it. It's just what it is. And so, okay, well, we'll deal with it. And so that's it. The big things for me is okay, you can't control other people. And so you don't have that control. Trying to own that you don't have that control is good. Mm-hmm. Remember that success is a process. It's not a destination, which means you are never going to be able to get the culture right and then not have to worry about losing people. Like, it just, it doesn't work. Or to get the culture right and not have to worry about culture issues in the future, because it's right. That's just, it's always a moving target. You're always going to be tinkering with culture. You just are. You can have great culture and people can still leave. I believe that I believe for whatever reason that we're all meant to have a certain number of disasters. Like, I believe that sometimes we walk in the rain, which I've talked about, which is you do everything right, and sometimes it just rains on you. I believe that sometimes the cosmos just decides to kick our butts for a while. And I don't know why, but we've all been through that. And it's like, it's not one thing. It's just everything. It's like you just get, you know, you wake up with a head cold, and then your kid's school bus doesn't show up, and then there's a traffic jam in a place where there's never a traffic jam, and that's like a 2-hour period of time, and you're like, why am all of a sudden am I just getting absolutely dumped on? I don't know, but that's part of the package deal that you get with life. Yeah, it's just life. And so that's it. The big takeaways here are, number one, try not to take this personally as a leader. Try not to take it personally. And that's been a long come around to that point of try not to take it personally. And it's really hard. Yeah. And everyone wants to believe if I was better, people wouldn't leave. And I would tell you, I really don't think that's true for most of us. You know, it's pretty rare, I think, that if you behave differently, people who seem to be happy would stick around. Like, that's pretty rare.
Well, I think those things are, I think what's really important is recognizing that those are not mutually exclusive, right? Like, you can be the best that you can be, and people will still leave. And so the question is not, what could I do better so that people don't leave? The question can be, what can I do better in the future? Like, you can ask that of yourself, but putting that on yourself, that if you do better, or if you strive to be better, that you'll get to that, you know, place where nobody ever leaves, that's the hallucination, right? Like, separate those two things in your head.
Well, that's the other big headspace part for me, is that culture is always changing, which means you have to constantly manage it. Mm-hmm. You have to always be making adjustments. You know, if you're running on autopilot, that's probably not good. You're going to have to engage and manage culture. So anyway, that's enough headspace. That's I think we've talked this kind of all the way around in kind of a weird way to basically say, try not to take it personally. These things happen. Keep doing your best.
That was that was the long philosophical Andy and Stephanie pep talk. That's what that just
was. We talked about earthquakes and pets dying in surgery.
What do you think? Should we take a break and then come back and talk about some action steps?
Yeah, we'll do action steps real fast.
Okay. Hey there, podcast listeners. I want to take a second and talk to you about our Leadership Essentials Certificate. Now, some of you have heard Annie and I talk about it on the podcast, but if you're new or if you haven't heard this before, I think it's really important, which is why I'm going to share it with you now. When our team sat down in the very beginning, we said, hey, look, we really believe that there is a foundational truth here to build off of, and that is everybody that's a part of the Uncharted team, everybody that is a part of the Uncharted community and finds us tends to believe that every single member of the practice has value and worth and deserves investment in. That's number one. And number two is that everybody on the team is needed and needs to have some basic leadership, professional, personal development skills, and business development skills in order to help the practice and the team run as efficient, effective, and rockstar-ish as they can. And so our team sat down and said, what would that look like? What would be some of those things that we would want every member of the team to have access to in terms of learnings? And after the last years of doing content for Uncharted, Annie and I pulled together the best of hits in terms of those foundational level content and workshop questions and discussion questions. And we put it together in one awesome, if I do say so myself, awesome, awesome package. And that is our Leadership Essentials Certificate. And so if you were like, hey, I would like my team to be maximally efficient, I would like them to be maximally effective, I would love them to learn how to be better communicators and how to work together as a team, we've got you. And if you're someone on a team listening to this right now and you're like, hey, I would like to do that, we've got you too. There's the ability to take one module at a time. You can buy the whole certificate. You can take it online. You can take it in a hybrid version where you do some workshop in virtual cohorts, but you also asynchronously watch videos. You can even come and do the whole thing in 2 days live with our team. And you can find out information about all of it at unchartedvet.com/certificates. That's certificate with an S at the end, because there's more where that came from. And now back to the podcast. Oh, but don't forget to go sign up.
All right. So action steps.
Okay.
The first thing I have to say, and everyone's gonna jump on this, the first thing you gotta do is check your assumptions, right? Like, is the culture really good? And I just, again, I said, don't take it personally. I was like, yeah. Okay, let's at least look in this box. Like, we just need to look in this box real quick. And so I don't know exactly how you do that in your practice, but just do a quick pulse check. Without talking about people leaving, I would just be like, how do I confirm that people are like, yeah, it's good. It's good here. You know, just because I don't want to be totally naive and just go, look, I don't understand. The culture here is great. Why does everybody leave? And meanwhile, they're screaming and, you know, they're like, I hate it so much.
I so much love that you said that. And also, I'm super proud of you. I'm slightly surprised because that was where I was going to go as well. But in the, there's really like three things that I think that we should look at when it comes to metrics, if you will, because you know that I'm a data nerd and I love the numbers. Sure. And yep. So cool. One of those should be looking at how, like, who are we losing and how are we losing them? And that's probably maybe where you're going next. But like the one of the other ones for me was, why are the people that you have staying? Like, how do they really feel? Ooh, and so if you're not doing something to measure how your culture, what your culture is and how happy people actually are with it, like that is absolutely action step number one, which is figure that out. And there's a whole host of ways that you can do that. You can do anonymous surveys. You can do 360 kind of feedback where you ask them to just tell them how they feel about working for you and at your practice. You can do like formal engagement surveys. There's a whole bunch of ways that you can do that. But just like we survey our clients after their visit to find out how they felt about their experience, we should be doing that with our team. And it's that same idea of we get a net promoter score from our clients, right? The number of people who would recommend us to other people. What does that look like in your practice? Like, what percent of your team is truly happy with their experience and would refer somebody else to come work for you, you want a way to capture that net promoter score for your team as well. And so there's tons of ways to do it. If you honestly, it's as like, if you don't know where to start, it does not have to, you do not have to have a big formal process. They are totally out there. It's something you can outsource. There are companies that absolutely can do engagement surveys for you, and not like at a super high price point either. They have options that are for small teams as well, but just to simply administer some asking that you got to ask them. And, you know, it can look as simple as you actually sitting down saying, hey guys, I just want to know how things are going, to having a formal thing. But you have to have some way where you're actually trying to get data so that you know, why are they staying? Are they truly happy here?
Yeah. No, I think that's really good. I like that you say that. So some of it is what's going on here. Let's check our assumptions.
Okay.
So that's my first one I start with. Right. The second thing I would do, and this kind of actually really fits into, I really like your why do they stay. The second one for me is check your objectives, which is, what are you trying to do? Like, what is the culture you want to create look like? Are you just making a culture based on kind of, I don't know, how we feel? Have you stopped and thought for a moment, like, what is a good culture? What do I think a good culture is? And a lot of us, we throw around the word good culture all the time, but we don't know what that is or what it looks like or what it feels like or what it sounds like. And if you're like, I'm at a complete loss, go ask your team. That's a great team exercise. Is what does a great culture look like, feel like, and sound like?
Yes.
And have them talk about it. And then you guys can all talk together. And that's a great way to do it. You may have your own views on, like, these are what our values are. This is what we care about in our practice. This is what we're aspiring to. I think asking the people, why do you stay here? What do you love? I think that's a great way to go, aha, well, that's part of the culture, or that should be part of the culture.
Yeah.
But it's funny how we look around and you go, I don't know, do I have a good culture? And my question back is always, what constitutes a good culture in your mind? Mm-hmm. What does that look like, sound mm-hmm. like, and feel like? Mm-hmm. What are the values that drive a good culture? What are you trying to accomplish here? And so anyway, that's a big one for me. So check your assumptions. What really matters here? And what do people actually care about? And I think that's what you were getting at. So I love it.
Before you jump to your second one, I also think that part of that process, I love that you said, just ask them, and like, what does the objective look like? Because part of that should be, if we go back to the headspace, if part of it is accepting that people are always going to leave, part of this process should be figuring out what is acceptable turnover, because we are always going to have turnover. And so, you know, looking at that for yourself and your team and recognizing someone's always going to leave. And so figuring out what is that threshold for yourself, so that it isn't just this gut email that this practice owner sent us of like, everyone is leaving. Well, is everyone leaving? Or have you had one person leave and you're taking that super personally, right? Like, you need to know what that kind of that threshold is to know where, you know.
I'm kind of with you and I'm kind of not in that.
Okay.
I would say, I think it's, so we have what's called recency bias, right? Where when something happens to us recently, we're like, oh my God, this has a huge weight.
Right.
You know? And having one person leave today feels really big.
Sure.
Even though a couple of years ago, we had 3 or 4 people leave over the course of 3 months.
Right.
But we've had 2 people this month. Oh my God. And it's like, that's recency bias, because it just happened. It feels bigger than past events. Looking back and saying, like, what have we had in the past? Is this really abnormal? Or is this, you know, is mm-hmm. this over time? Does this sort of make sense? I get that. I don't know what you do with, like, if you make a acceptable level, I guess my whole sort of thought at the beginning was, often if you're doing what you can to control the culture, you just don't have that control. You know, if you say the acceptable level is 2 people leaving in a month and 3 people come in and say they're going to quit, what am I going to tie myself to one of their cars? You know, like, that's what it is. I mean, I already knew this was not what I wanted, and now... Now I got to work on it. So I don't know that I can set a limit and say, I'm sorry, we've had all the resignations we can have this month. You're going to have to wait until next year to put in your application to resign.
Oh my God.
So I don't know. So data for this. Like, it's good to have some perspective. I think it's good. All right, so hold on. Let me get back on this. So action steps, check your assumptions, check your objectives. What does a good culture look like? Figure that out, whether it's from your values or from talking to your team. What do they care about? Number three for me is think of what is in your control. What is really in your control? So to Stephanie's point, like before, of like, is this an acceptable level? And me sort of saying, I don't know what you're going to do about it. I can't stop people from leaving.
Right.
But I can make a plan and say, this is what we're going to try to do based on what we've learned, based on what we think is going to help, right. Whether it is attracting and recruiting new people or right. Making sure we keep old people or not old people, but keep our current people. I don't know. Boy, I don't want to let the old people leave. Like, look, Cheryl, you really can't quit. You're almost 70. I've got to have you.
I got to keep you.
Got to keep you specifically because I'm keeping old people. Anyway, almost 70 is not old. Just before more. God, we're going to get so much hate from this episode. So much hate is going to come to me at this episode. Anyway, you get the gist. Anyway, what is in your control? Can you make a plan? Can you write it down? Every time you start worrying, look at the plan. Mm-hmm. And that leads me into my next step, which is stop ruminating. Mm-hmm. Stop ruminating. And again, this eats people up. It's the constant worry. What am I doing? What am I going to do? What am I, you know?
Yeah.
If this is out of your control and they're leaving, worrying about it doesn't help. And I know it's easy to say that and it's really hard to do. It's action over anxiety is figure out what's in your control. Do your research, talk to your people, make a plan, run your plan. Whenever you start to ruminate, go back to your plan and say, what could I be doing right now to advance this plan?
Yes.
And that's my thing. Yeah. Just remember, continue recruiting people, continue developing the people that you have, continue to cross train so that if and when people leave, you've got coverage. Like, those things need to be processes that are ongoing. But anyway, that's it. That's all I got all over the place. But there is a plan there. I promise there's a plan. Check your assumptions, check your objectives, figure out what's in your control. Write a plan, make it, stop ruminating. Remember that recruiting and development should be ongoing processes.
Okay, so I love that you said stop ruminating and make a plan, because that's where my head immediately went to with the action steps. So step number one is if you aren't asking them why are they staying and starting to engage with that information and figure out what to do with it, that's one piece of it. So I said there's three pieces for me. So why are the people staying? And then once you start to get that information, you have to make a plan for what you're going to do with it. Do more of it, because you want, if you know why they're staying and they tell you why they're happy, if you want them to stay and you want other people to stay, you just do more of that and figure out how to make that happen more frequently, right? So that's number one. Number two would be if you aren't looking at why people are leaving and tracking that and doing something with that information, that's the second step. So that can look a whole bunch of ways, but minimally it should be for your own sanity, keeping track, whether it's in your payroll software or in a spreadsheet, just when you do have people leave, was it voluntary or involuntary? So did they choose to leave or did you terminate them? And then a reasoning, right? So that I can look back, and this is super helpful for staying in that healthy headspace. Because let me tell you, I remember vividly being in a place where I had a year that was my highest turnover yet. And I was feeling not dissimilar to this practice owner and really down on myself and was like, I'm a horrible manager. All of these people have left over this last year. And when I sat down and looked at my little spreadsheet, all of those people except for one had a legitimate thing. Someone mm-hmm. retired. We had marriages. We had babies. We had military separations. So like, I look back and I was like, could I control any of that? No. Were they happy when they left? Did they tell me that they were sad that they were leaving us? Yes, all of them. So why would I freak out about that and turn this into a mountain when it really is a molehill, because I had one person who I could have potentially impacted. So I then was able to choose to focus on What did they tell us? Why did they leave? And they gave some good nuggets because I was doing exit interviews in what we could do. And so figure out a process that allows you to look at why are your people leaving? And you know me, I like looking at it from a statistical perspective, but also the information that you glean from that. So if you're not asking them when they leave, if there's things that you could have done better, and is there something that could have convinced them to stay? Like, that's an easy starting place. Ask everybody who leaves your practice, you know, why are they leaving?
Yeah.
Could you have done anything better? And is there anything you could do to convince them to stay? Not that you would be able to do it, but just so that you know. Because if you consistently start to hear people are leaving because of the pay, that is maybe something that's within your reach to change. And to your point, if then the next step is continue to recruit and develop, like that's something actionable that we can put into play with our existing team and with future teams. So look at why people are leaving, look at why they're staying. And then the last piece is to look at those two things together and figure out where is the gap. So if you're consistently getting told it has to do with pay or more opportunities or things that are actually a part of your control as an owner, as a manager, as a leader, you can create that action plan. If you're not getting those two pieces of data, you're just sitting there in the rumination place and you're going to live in a box in the woods with Andy. So get out of the box and start asking them the questions. That's all I got.
No, I agree. All right. Well, let's wrap it up here, guys. Thanks for tuning in and listening, everybody.
This was fun, Andy. Thank you. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
And that's a wrap on another episode of the Uncharted Podcast. Thanks for joining us and spending your week with us. If you enjoyed this week's episode, head over to wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. It's the best way to let us know that you love listening. We'll see you next time.